Our Old Testament reading this evening comes from Joshua 10, but I'm going to begin back in Joshua 1. So please turn, if you have a Bible, to Joshua 1. I wanted to remind us of the promise that God gave Joshua, because that promise is played out in chapter 10. The promise I'm talking about is in Joshua 1, verses 3 to 9. I'm going to read those first, and then we'll go to Joshua 10. Every place, this is what the Lord is telling Joshua at the very beginning of this conquest of the promised land. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous. And those words come up many times in this book, or several times. Be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people, the Israelites, to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may have good success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened, and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So with that in mind, that promise in mind, now let's go to Joshua 10. And this is this chapter is a little longer than some of the others. I'll offer some comments along the way, but most of my comments will be on the first part of what's described here, and the rest we'll just read without very much comment. But you'll recall that, as Pastor Barnes covered last week, in chapter 9, we had the deception of the Gibeonites. They really lived fairly nearby, but pretended that they came from a faraway place. And Israel made peace with them, though they did not consult God in that. But treaty between Israel and Gibeon is sort of one-sided, because Gibeon actually just surrendered and wanted to be servants of Israel rather than being annihilated. And so that treaty comes into play in this chapter. And so it's good to keep that in mind also. The promises of God and that treaty that has just been made. And I hope you bear with me as I might stumble over some of these names. So beginning in Joshua 10, as soon as Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem — it sounds a little strange that there would be a Gentile who's king of Jerusalem, but this was before Jerusalem was declared to be Zion. The king of Jerusalem heard how Joshua had captured Ai and had devoted it to destruction, doing to Ai and its king as he had done to Jericho and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them. He feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai, and all its men were warriors. I think that's the first we've heard that these Gibeonites were warriors. They did not come easily, I would not imagine, to the decision to try to make peace with Israel, to come with hat in hand and this pretense of being from far away. They are proud war people. They're mighty warriors, and yet they humbled themselves, and it saved their lives, even if it was by deception. K continuing in verse 3. So Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, to Piram, king of Jarmuth, to Japhia, king of Lachish, and to Deber, king of Eglon, saying, "Come up to me and help me, and let us strike Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the people of Israel." Then the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, those five kings, gathered their forces and went up with all their armies and encamped against Gibeon and made war against it. And notice, they didn't attack Israel, they attacked Israel's ally, and they probably saw this as a way to draw Israel into a fight at the place of their choosing, rather than at the place where Israel was located. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp in Gilgal, this is some distance away where Joshua was, saying, "Do not relax your hand from your servants." They still understand that they are servants of Israel. "Come up to us quickly and save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the hill country are gathered against us." So Joshua went up from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And it occurs to me right here, maybe it occurred to Joshua, might this be a trap? Could it be that the Gibeonites did their deception, made this treaty, and it was all for the purpose of later drawing Israel up to their place with all these kings arrayed against them, and maybe it would be six kings fighting Israel, not just five? Maybe the Gibeonites would turn, because there's no reason to think they're going to honor their word. They might join the five kings and fight Israel. And what does Joshua think of that possibility? It doesn't say he considered that, but any military man is going to think of this. What does he think of that? Does that cause him any concern? Verse 7, "So Joshua went up from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him and all the mighty men of valor." He didn't hesitate. "And the Lord said to Joshua, 'Do not fear them, for I have given them into your hands. Not a man of them shall stand before you.'" And I'm sure Joshua is thinking back to that promise, those promises given to him in chapter 1, that there would be the Lord's assistance in everything that Joshua would put his hand to, and that no one would be able to stand before them. "So Joshua came upon them suddenly, having marched up all night from Gilgal." There's something significant there. They marched all night and then went to war. Wouldn't they be tired? Isn't this a kind of a mistake from a military standpoint? Apparently not. This was their surprise attack, and it was exactly the right thing to do. When you've got the Lord on your side, you can do these things. And one of the, Pastor Barnes had given me a commentary by Ralph Davis to read, and one of the comments he made was, God's promise to be with Israel did not make them lazy. They didn't say, "Oh, well, God's promised to give us the land, so let him do all our fighting for us, and we'll just come in and collect all of the goods." No, they marched all night, and they went to war. They were ready to work hard to get what God had promised them. It didn't make them lazy, but it actually energized them, it seems. They were motivated by the promises of God, and shouldn't we be motivated to obedience by the promises of God? Continuing on in Joshua 10, verse 10, "And the Lord threw them into a panic before Israel, who struck them with a great blow at Gibeon and chased them by the way of the ascent of Beth Horon, and struck them as far as Ezekah and Mekedah. And they fled before Israel while they were going down the ascent of Beth Horon. The Lord threw down large stones from heaven on them as far as Ezekah, and they died, There were more who died because of the hailstones than the sons of Israel killed with the sword. God was fighting for Israel. And this brings to mind another comment of Ralph Davis. He said, the Lord was fighting for them. Jesus, the King, which we're going to hear about some more this evening, Jesus, the King, the captain of the Lord's army, was fighting for Israel. And Ralph Davis says, he doesn't come to us reeking with hand cream. I never thought of that. He's not a wimp. Our captain is strong and fierce. Yahweh. More were killed with hailstones than with the sword. At that time, Joshua spoke to the Lord. This is a prayer of Joshua. He spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord gave the Amorites over to the sons of Israel. And he said, in the sight of Israel, sun, stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stopped until the nation took vengeance on their enemy. Is this not written in the book of Jeshar? The sun stopped in the midst of the heaven and did not hurry to set for about a whole day. There has been no day like it before or since when the Lord heeded the voice of man, for the Lord fought for Israel. So Joshua returned and all Israel with him to the camp at Gilgal. Strikes me that Joshua didn't pray for more hail. Why not pray for hail? That'll do the killing for you. But he prayed for daylight so that his army could have the victory, so that he could do what he could. He prayed for more time to complete the battle and to annihilate the people that God had commanded him to annihilate. So once again, the promises of God motivated Joshua and his army to obedience, not to laziness. And we need to take that to heart. We should not be a lazy people just because we have the promises of God. Now, there's been a lot of argument about how could the sun stand still and the moon stand still? How could the earth stop spinning for a day without destroying everything? We're moving right now at 800 miles an hour. And if the earth stopped, it would like we all would lurch east suddenly at 800 miles an hour with the earth running beneath us. And you can imagine the devastation. No one would survive the first second of that event. And yet, that's what God did. And then he started it up again. He stopped it, and then he started it up again. How can he do that? Well, it seems to me the God who can, with a mere spoken word, bring half a trillion galaxies into existence, just stopping a planet's no problem. And so we go on. And my mind tends to want to think about the physics of it, but God turns our attention to what he's interested in, and that is, God heeded the voice of a man. He answered prayer. There's never been a day before or since when God heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. He calls us to pray according to his promises. And Joshua was praying according to the promises he had been given of victory in these battles. The remainder of this chapter I'm going to just read without much comment. These five kings fled and hid themselves in the cave at Mekeda, and it was told to Joshua, the five kings have been found hidden in the cave at Mekeda. And Joshua said, roll large stones against the mouth of the cave and set men by it to guard them. But do not stay there yourselves. Pursue your enemies. Don't be lazy. Work. Attack their rear guard. Do not let them enter their cities, for the Lord your God has given them into your hand. When Joshua and the sons of Israel had finished striking them with a great blow until they were wiped out, and when the remnant that remained of them had entered into the fortified cities, then all the people returned safe to Joshua in the camp at Makkedah. Not a man moved his tongue against any of the people of Israel. Then Joshua said, "Open the mouth of the cave and bring those five kings out to me from the cave." And they did so, and brought those five kings out to him from the cave, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon. And when they brought those kings out to Joshua, Joshua summoned all the men of Israel and said to the chiefs of the men of war who had gone out with him, "Come near, put your feet on the necks of these kings." And Ralph Davis says, "It's dirty feet on royal necks." He's got lots of little clever statements. Then they came near and put their feet on their necks. And Joshua said to them, "Do not be afraid or dismayed. Be strong and courageous." There's that phrase again. "For thus the Lord will do to all your enemies against whom you fight." And afterward Joshua struck them and put them to death, and he hanged them on five trees, and they hung on the trees until evening. But at the time of the going down of the sun, Joshua commanded, and they took them down from the trees and threw them into the cave where they had hidden themselves, and then set large stones against the mouth of the cave, which remained to this very day. As for Makkedah, Joshua captured it on that day and struck it and its king with the edge of the sword. He devoted to destruction every person in it. He left none remaining, and he did to the king of Makkedah just as he had done to the king of Jericho. Then Joshua and all Israel with him passed on from Makkedah to Libnah and fought against Libnah, and the Lord gave it also and its king into the hand of Israel. And he struck it with the edge of the sword, and every person in it, he left none remaining in it. And he did this, and he did to its king as he had done to the king of Jericho. And you'll notice they're really doing it here. Later they slack off and they don't finish the job, but they were told to annihilate, and that's what they did here. Then Joshua and all Israel with him passed on from Libnah to Lachish and laid siege to it and fought against it. And the Lord gave Lachish into the hand of Israel, and he captured it on the second day and struck it with the edge of the sword and every person in it, as he had done to Libnah. Then Horam, king of Gezer, came up to help Lachish, and Joshua struck him and all his people until he left none remaining. Then Joshua and all Israel with him passed on from Lachish to Eglon. They're wiping out the cities that these kings had come out of. They laid siege to it and fought against it, and they captured it on that day and struck it with the edge of the sword. And he devoted every person in it to destruction that day, as he had done to Lachish. We see here a picture of the judgment day, how horrible and terrifying it will be for God's enemies. Then Joshua and all Israel with him went up from Eglon to Hebron, and they fought against it and captured it and struck it with the edge of the sword and its king and its towns and every person in it. He left none remaining, as he had done to Eglon, and he devoted it to destruction, every person in it. Then Joshua and all Israel with him turned back to Debir and fought against it, and he captured it along with its king and all its towns, and they struck them with the edge of the sword and devoted to destruction every person in it. He left none remaining, just as he had done to Hebron and to Libnah and its king, so he did to Debir and its king. And now the last of these battles. So Joshua struck the whole land, the hill country and the Negeb, and the lowland and its slopes and all their kings, and he left none remaining, but devoted to destruction all that breathed, just as the Lord God of Israel commanded. And Joshua struck them from Kadesh Barnea as far as Gaza, and all the country of Goshen as far as Gibeon. And Joshua captured all these kings in their land at one time, because the Lord God of Israel fought for them. How many times have we heard that here? God was fighting for them. Then Joshua returned, and all Israel with him, to the camp at Gilgal. There was a great campaign, but the Lord brought it about.